Welcome to Let's Talk, broadcast throughout the National Indigenous Radio Service. The only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. Broadcasting over 20 solid years, highlighting the injustice from community to country, suburb to city.
No more whispering in our minds.
Starting your week with Black Excellence, the best way to start the week. Deadly yarns of mob in our community, demonstrating Black Excellence. This is David Williams, continuing the legacy that is Let's Talk.
Yes, you are tuned to Let's Talk of Black Excellence. I'm your host, David Williams. I'm a proud Waka Waka man and the owner and executive director of Kalimba. As a matter of protocol, I would like to start by acknowledging country, acknowledging the traditional owners, the lands in which this show is coming to you from, the West End Studios of Brisbane, and pay my respects to mob all across the country, and our elders, our knowledge holders, who've passed down knowledge through many generations to allow us to practice our culture today. Well, we've got a very exciting special guest on the show today. As all of our guests that we have on Let's Talk are always special and very exciting. Somebody who I've been able to work with on a number of occasions, and those occasions have been quite fun and very well known across the music landscape, but also the wider landscape, the festival circuit and a range of other musical events around Australia, but also overseas. I'd like to welcome to Let's Talk of Black Excellence, Zachariah Fielding.
Let's talk about it. Thank you so much for having me, gorgeous.
No, this is an absolute pleasure, Zachariah. I remember when we're down in Yarban earlier this year, I said, hey, I host this show and I got to get you on some stage, and I'm really stoked you have, because obviously you've got a show coming up which we're going to talk about, but I've been looking forward to this yarn. And you know, you're well known, as I mentioned, in a variety of different circles, but we'll take it back to the start, as we often do with our guests on Let's Talk. Born in South Australia, and you know, studied music and ended up as one half of Electric Fields, but take us to where it started, Zachariah, back in the beginning, earliest memories of your journey.
Yes. So my greatest memory, it's based in Mimili community in Central Australia. And that's where I grew up with my 8 younger siblings that are after me, and just in a community of approximately 250 members of the community in Mimili. And a lot of my great memories and hurtful memories come from Mimili, but the ones that I cherish the most and the ones that are my source in my current life, where I draw all of my inspirations from, is from Mimili community. And it is based, there's a song ground as well where a lot of my resources for my creativity come from. And it's the song ground for the grandchildren and the grandparents to, where they're teaching a lot of the cultural protocols and the culture way of doing things. And then just the way to behave, or even to be monitored and learning how to make mistakes and learning why you made the mistake and what you can do from that mistake. So that's where it is all based. That's where I anchor from, is from Mimili. And I currently now live in Adelaide on Kaurna country. Shout out to Kaurna mob. I really have also created amazing memories here and shared everything that I know from Mimili, and then shared everything that I've learned from all the relationships that I've built here in Adelaide. And Adelaide is also the city that gifted me my friend, my collaborator, my Michael Ross, who has given me the opportunity to see the world and experience music and different styles, and then just that creative realm through the Electric Fields platform. And Kaurna country has also given me a visual arts world, where I also work at the APY Collective here in Adelaide. And I work with my elders in Adelaide, some of the pioneers, the people that have created that space I work alongside a lot of massive giants, like real strong, staunch women. And to have both of our careers braid into what this is now has been a really a good journey. It's all of the things. It's all of the. It's all the colors. It's all the shades.
That's great. There's Zachariah, and you know, that big shout out to Ghana Country, Adelaide. Moving from Mimley, because you went to boarding school, eh? Like from there, ended up at the Centre for Aboriginal Studies and Music at the University of Adelaide. Tell us about, I guess, that early journey. Like, was it something you always knew you wanted to be in the creative field, whether it be music, whether it be visual art, or both? What was that journey in that post school? You know, in that tertiary component of your journey.
It was difficult. It was not that easy. Like, being a bush kid and then transitioning into city life, you had to learn the way that the English language is used. You have to learn body language really quick. There's things that you can and you can't do in the city that you kind of get away with in the desert. But it's all based from humility and humor where we come from. Here, learning really quick and young that everything's guarded here, everything's labeled, everything's someone owns something. We never really understood what ownership was. We also didn't even know what Australia Day or Survival Day was. That's how detached we kind of were with the news in the desert. And that transition was emotionally difficult. Sometimes it still triggers me every now and then, now that I'm a little evolved as a human, as a being. But it's just the ways you had to learn, and then the food is different. It was a tough transitioning, but you know, we all got there because I was a part of the boarding school. I did go to Woodchow, where all the APY children, Arunungu Pidindari, Yankundari kids would reside at the dorm. And then I was always with all the boys, which made it even more difficult with my sexuality and things. You know, it was just, there was just layers on layers. So I had to learn really, really quick and navigate through that. And a lot of good people were there to kind of take me out of that when I was in high school. And then then university life happened, and that's where things got a little bit more easier. You got to interact with lecturers and the other students that come from different walks of life and different language groups from around the country, and they were your mob, and you learnt why they're your mob, and you were learning different languages as well, and the similarities in your culture. And then because I studied at Centre of Aboriginal Studies and Music, the core thing was, the faculty was music, but it was also trying to understand why we liked music as black fellas, like why country music was, what was the history in that, what was the history in reggae, what was the history in jazz. You know, you learn all of those things. I didn't graduate from that university, but like, I don't care. I took my lecture on tour, that's for sure. Anyways, Grayson Ratana, shout out. but yeah, that whole transitioning it helped create the music, and it helped create the art now for me, because all of it was experiences, and it was what is he thinking, what is she thinking, you know, the push and pulls of what the mind was doing and how to get to A to B. So I think it still kind of happens in its own volume now, but back then it was just everyone was hustling but didn't know where we were going, you know.
I mean, it is an incredible journey because, I mean, your collaborator, you know, the other half of Electric Fields, Michael Ross, what you've explained and shared with us during your university career is something that I certainly witnessed with Michael, because Michael and I actually went to university together at UT back in the early 2000s. So it was interesting that you know, kind of learning and that push-pull and developing and really finding yourself and your place and your voice and all of that. And funnily enough, when we were yarning, I think last year or the year before, talking about university, he also mentioned that he'd never finished university either. And it's not so much a lesson we want to put out there. Well, I guess... in some way that you don't need university to be out there and be a big megastar like yourself and Michael, but you know, it is that journey, you know, you're on that journey musically and developing and exploring that.
Yeah.
But it's an incredible thing. But I think when I came across yourself and your work was when you were on the TV and on The Voice back in, I believe it was 2014. What was the journey there from, university studies up to, you know, your time on The Voice? And what was that experience like?
Oh, that was a poxy experience. I did not like it at all. It's not because of the show or the production or anything, but like when you step into something like that and not know who you are or have a grip of don't have your mental house in order. So I came out of like, you know, being desert kid, then learning all of these ways of doing things and then just chucking yourself on one of the big national platforms. It was not the right thing to do. Like, you know, cause you're being really exposed. I loved what I did in my delivery with my sisters, Crystal West, Eddie Marbo's granddaughter, and shout out to my sister. I think we did an amazing job with ZK, but I just was not there. I was not present. The comments in the on the YouTube channels, like, they were just brutal. You kind of learnt the racism and just the bigotness, just how ugly people could be on the internet. And then there was this situation where all of the Kylie Minogue fans attacked me as well, because in one of the episodes it looked as if I snubbed her, and then it was just the whole snubbing thing. I was like, this is not what, I don't know what these mobile are doing. Like, the comment section really killed me, and it like put me in a really dark place. And I enjoyed what we did musically, but I didn't like what it came with.
And that would eventually, from that time, end up with that connection and collaboration with Michael along the way.
And then after that dark place, then I was drawn into the light with a little bit of more of an understanding of who I was and what I was doing and what I could contribute to the art of collaboration. Mm-hmm. It felt like it was a second chance to do that, and I smashed that, and Electric Fields has set me up to then collaborate well with the visual arts, and I work with multiple artists there, and I do a lot of collaborations now. I've got a collaboration work now at the Adelaide Town Hall, and it's called what did I name it? See, I've got too many exhibitions going on. And I've got an exhibition now at the Town Hall, and it's called Burkari. And Burkari means, like, to slow down. And then I've got that till the end of this month. And then I've got another show here in Adelaide with my gallerist, Hugo Michelle, and it's my second solo show with him here in Adelaide as well, on Ghana Country. Mm-hmm. But experience of The Voice has done has just made me be more present with all of the collaborations, all of the relationships that I build from now on, and how to be open and transparent and respectful, and, you know, bringing the creative juices alive and having an impact and doing it in the way that suits those energies playing.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible, there, Zachariah. And I remember the first time to see Zachariah as part of Electric Fields was the 10-year anniversary of the apology on the lawns of Parliament House in February 2018. And to see this new, you know, ensemble out there with just such a fresh and different sound was incredible. That just took in a short amount of time, I'd have to say the whole music scene by storm, you know, the performance entertainment industry, because in such a short amount of time, I'd seen you at Woodford doing it up there, and then it was the following year, I remember it was at Goma in Brisbane that you were doing an up late there, which was in the lead up to the competition that to seek, I think there was a short list of a number of Australian artists to do Eurovision back in 2019.
Yeah.
Which obviously Kate Miller-Heike took that out, which, you know, that was, I don't know whether that was a blessing in disguise or whether you were right to do it back then, or whether that helped set you up for, you know, the performance over there last year. But in that short amount of time, Zachariah, what was that like to just hit those big stages and big audiences, and you just got this, you know, building an audience so quickly that just jump on board the Electric Feels train?
You get hungry. Like when I first learned how to maneuver on the stage and saw that it was another, because the audience of the collaborator, who we collaborate with as well, to conjure that music energy and that audience energy, you get hungry and you get you kind of sit inside of the power, and then you go to the next stage, and then the next festival, and it just builds, it grows, and then it becomes its own little movement, and you only feel it however long the set is. And once I got on the carousel of that energy, I was just like, this is going to be the rest of my life for a while. And it's going to heal me. So I stayed in the healing process of it, because you could sense that, like, it's an Australian audience and there's just different thought patterns all going on all at the same time, because I'm hip like that. I'm open to, when I'm performing, to receive those things, whether the mind is open or closed, and I like dancing with it. And it just got really, it's just a really good, beautiful place to sit in. It's a very vulnerable place. It's like you're playing with paints or a palette anyways, but through sound, if that makes sense. And you're just painting new pictures all the time.
I think you've just hit the nail on the head there, Zachariah, because I know two Zacharias, right? I know the Zachariah on stage that just has this immense energy and just draws in a crowd and just is so mesmerizing. And I've seen that standing side stage, watching Zachariah on stage as part of Electric Feels, and then the Zachariah backstage afterwards just chilling out, just, oh, yeah, you know, we're just having a yard and this and that. And it's incredible, because that's the true art form, where you've got that stage as your canvas and you are that paintbrush to help paint that landscape or that masterpiece in front of an audience.
And everyone is offering a palette as well. And because you are in control of the whole thing and you're the one with the microphone, it's like you can tap into what they have to give, and then they're contributing by offering their colors as well. So yeah, that's how I'm going to start describing it now. That's the first time I could, you know, kind of articulate what it is. It's really hard. Being an artist is not so easy. It's a very imaginative world. It's on the cusp of real and lunatic, you know?
No, but I've seen that too with, like, your wardrobe, and how it's like this kind of peeling back the layers over a 40-minute set where you know where you're starting, that canvas is blank. You walk out onto stage, and then with every single layer that comes off, that paintbrush has added another stroke onto the canvas. And do you bring that audience along with you on that journey? And then by the end, you've just got this masterpiece which you're literally just got the audience in the palm of your hand. And it is just incredible to witness and be a part of a live show of Electric Feels.
Yes. Oh no, I totally love it. I'm just so happy with all the people that have helped build Electric Feels like that, and all our friends and our managers, and just the people that believe in it. Because, like, we've also found we're not really easily pigeonholed here in Australia or in genres. So Electric Fields as a whole, as its own enterprise, has a difficult way of being shelved. And I like that it just is one of them little Harry Potter books where it's just floating around and you can't put it anywhere. It's in midair.
So that's what it's like with this market here in Australia. You've done the overseas performances. We'll get to Eurovision shortly. But back in 22, when you performed in New York City, where you did the big event in Central Park in New York City, but also the Lincoln Center, how did that international audience receive and respond to Electric Fields on stage, as you know, you and Michael do your performance?
I think because there was only one show, you have to have the energy and the stamina to hold and to move in those spaces. So I think the New York, America market will be something that we will do eventually. I don't know what door we'll enter, but like that experience was more of an entree. And it was a great time, but you have to ask yourself, how much do you want to sacrifice and how much do you want it to be heard over there? Because we could easily do the same thing that we did in Australia, in any country, really. But it is about the sacrifice. But I do think that that's something that will come a little later in the future, because now we're just finishing off the album this year and we're releasing a single hopefully from that album in a month. So that should roll the ball as well. Just, I don't like to think about it as a business thing, like this is what it should be. I think Electric Fields as a energy has moved in its own way. So every time I'm in those little business meetings and they're like this and that, I'm like, well, that's great, but it will only pop when it wants to pop. You know, you can't move it. Like, get all the logistics and the statistics and the variables out of the way and do all of that. But, like, Electric Fields is always going to go somewhere or be in the same room as something. Mm. We've maneuvered in masculine spaces. We've moved in a lot of spaces. And I look forward to seeing what the book looks like when, because our manager's writing a book as well through the journey, Diana. And
shout out to Diana.
Shout out. But because we're on the go, I don't know what is happening. I don't know what we've been through. So I'm one of those movers that don't really sit and reflect. And funny enough, this interview seems like I'm reflecting a little bit, and I hardly ever do that, because I've always got something to do and I need to be moving.
You are tuned to Let's Talk of Black Excellence with my guest today, Zachariah Fielding, talking all things so far music, a little bit of art, but we're going to get onto the art space, because while a lot of people in the live scene know you as a performer and entertainer and an amazing musician, come COVID 2020, the music industry, the entertainment live industry shuts down. You've pivoted during that time.
Yeah.
Connected up with your APY aunties through Art Center there. Like, what happened at that point? Share with our listeners what happened.
We didn't know what was happening. Time was just, it was just out the window. Nobody really gave a beep about AMs or PMs. But my elders, especially my Nana Inawinji Williams, bless her, she passed now, but she was the first lady that tapped me when we were all going through these the chaos, and she was the first to tap me and was like, would you like to play around with Canvas? Because I knew that they would, the elders started the company, the APY Collective, and I didn't go in because I was too busy with the Electric Field stuff. But then, yes, COVID hit. And then I went in, and then I just fell in love with Canvas. I fell in love with the room. I fell in love with the space. I loved the gossiping that was going on with the elders. I loved it was a reporting place. Like, it felt like it was a broadcasting place on what was happening in the cities for AP, like I know people, and then reporting it back to the bush and into the city, and so and so did this, so and so did that. Did you hear? So it was nice to be in that company as well. It kind of like made the work and my process really fun. I started off having fun, and four canvases became five canvases, and then it became seven, eight. And then once I got to 10, because I was just stacking them every time I was finished, and then Nani Nundri is like, oh, do you want an exhibition? And I was like, what is that? Like, what is an exhibition? And she goes, we'll just hang these works on this date and rah, rah, rah. And then the date that my first exhibition ever landed on, it landed on my birthday. So they, she positioned it like that, and then bang, it was my first ever 6 months in the game, just painting, and then my first solo show just sold out. And I was like, okay. And I've never seen a check like that in a quick way. Like, it was it was a scary moment to see the coin just go blonk, blonk.
And but that's when all family start lining up. Yeah, Zachariah, yes! You're up alone.
And I was like, no. And then Dad wanted a car, Mum wanted a car, everyone wanted a car. I was like, come on. I'm going to try and drive this new career. But it was a real, real, real journey. It was so, it was good to kill time like that. That money, that first exhibition money, God, I tell you, like, if I knew what I knew now, I would have done it differently. But I've got a good hang on things now financially. You know, you have to get the broker, you have to get this here. But, like, you know, that little sum of money, I was so sad that I just said, oh, you get, I felt like Oprah Winfrey for a moment.
You get a car.
Oh, it was so, but bless, you live and you learn, I suppose. But that was my skin in the game in the visual arts was guided by powerful Arnanga women and humor and just fun. I had a lot of fun. You sense the seriousness in things, but to ride that, you have to, with humor comes in as a really powerful card. Mm. And that's what I got given from the visual arts career.
Now, Zachariah, we talked about the rise to, I guess, hitting, I don't like to say hitting it big in the music world, but to grow that audience and have those big events over a short amount of time, you've replicated that in your art career. Because when you'd won the Wynn Art Prize, I thought, hold on, like, I only kind of remember, like, seeing some of your stuff not long ago, and then hearing later on that you'd only started during painting, or started, you know, painting during COVID. But Wynn Prize, also a finalist for the Ramsey Art Prize, the Art Gallery of South Australia,
yeah,
and also a finalist for the 24 Hadley's Art Prize for landscape. So, in the space of only a couple of years, you got that big, big fancy check with all that family lining up saying, "Where's my motor car?" And now, you know, you're picking up these art awards, and obviously art awards are very subjective. It's not why you do it, but I think out in the art world, people actually take notice. They're saying, who's this Zachariah Fielding, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, big shout out to Jen Murphy, who represents you here in Brisbane, and yeah, you've had your solo shows through Jen Murphy's art gallery.
Yes.
But it's an incredible feat, Zachariah, to, you know, to progress so quickly only after a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. I think this is my thing is that I have a real good read on people. Like, you can do this thing and be this one person, but, like, it takes a team as well, and people that you can respect and that help you get there. So I've got a lot of I've had a lot of help from a lot of people, and I keep them very, very close, and I call them family. It's just the way you behave. It's the way you treat people. I got a long way on just being honest and being as honest as I can, but learning, always open to criticism, and also, you know, because both of these industries are not really designed for black followers. You know, like, there's a lot of whiteness in there, and a lot of there's just a different type of psychological order that goes on for a black fella. So when you're new to it, and then you know you're up against something, and you can tell if you're being cheated or not, you know, there's a lot of you just have to be internally switched on and your awareness card to go through this and to have, I think, with the career that I've had and the speed it had, it's because I've got my eye, like, it's like a hawk, you know. If you're cheating me, you're cheating me. I'm just aware. If you're loving me, you're loving me. And then the ride will be quick. It will go fast. And I think that's when it's feeling good and it's right and it's honest, I think anything can really happen. I think it's the way that you treat the experience. Mm. That's what, how the speed had happened for me.
Mm. Now, experience. Absolutely. But and I think that's a real, you know, really advanced way of looking things, because for some people it takes an entire lifetime to build that street smarts to be able to read people in a way that...
Absolutely, and for trust as well, because a lot of us black fellas trust that mm-hmm. much, and it's mm-hmm. fair. You kind of understand why.
Yeah.
But there's things that you just got to have a good read on, yeah. Mm. And that's what I do in the music, that's what I do in the visuals, that's what I do on the stage, that's what I do behind stage, that's what I do on the streets.
Mm.
I love people.
Mm. Mm. Talking experience, before I mentioned Eurovision, which for many of our listeners may or may not be aware, many of yous would, but Eurovision 2024, Malmo in Sweden. Sweden or Switzerland?
Sweden.
Take us back to there. You know what? I found out this was happening because Brother Fred Leone's been on the show.
Yeah.
He posted something about, on his Facebook saying, "Good morning, Malmö, Sweden." And I was like, yeah. And it's not unusual for people like Fred and others out there to just pop up anywhere around the world. You know, it's not a surprising thing for anybody. Anyway, I seen that and I thought, oh, I wonder where Eurovision is this year. And I Googled it and it said the same city. I'm like, yeah. And I texted him. I said, you're Eurovision, eh? It's like, shh, yeah, but don't tell anyone. We're not allowed to tell anyone. I was like, okay. And then I think, because SBS were obviously doing the coverage, and then they had their whole media strategy around it, you know, when it gets out there. And then it started drip feeding out there, right? Electric Fields here doing Eurovision. I thought, oh, boo, yes. Yes, this is what we've been waiting for, because obviously 2019, it didn't happen for Electric Fields, but 2022 was. And I thought, this is amazing. And I just followed that journey, you know, everything that was shared until, I remember even when it was broadcast, it was 4 or 5 in the morning. I woke up and watched the live performance. Take us back there, Zachariah. That whole journey, because I know it's one of the biggest productions you'll ever see. Well, if not the biggest production in terms of you know, cameras and lights and staging and all the rest of it that you'll see.
Oh,
what was that like?
It was crazy when we got the phone call, because the phone call that I got, I was at the art gallery and SBS Mob called and told us, like, we're picking you, we're going to choose you to go for 2024. And I was like, what? And then had my moment, and then I got another phone call straight after, and then I found out I had my first fashion show with a Sydney Fashion Week. So I was doing two things all at the same time. So, but quickly, just like when I finished the Eurovision experience, as soon as I landed back in Sydney, I went straight to Sydney Fashion Week to see my works on the runway with Romance Is Born. So it was just epic from the beginning to the end. It was just crazy. But inside the Eurovision experience and just getting the call and then traveling over to the country and then offering the globe the Yidaki and its power and just the songwriting skill that we were bringing and the meaning to the song and then having the backup singers and working with SBS, it was a massive machine. It's an experience that probably will take me a while to kind of like really step back and have a look at it. And also I went into that whole experience with a broken heart as well. Oh, so it made it really like you had to play and you had to be quick, but like working along and having breakfast with all the other different country representatives and learning the meaning of their songs and the cultures that they come from. Like I got to meet all the artists, and I, because I'm a people's person, I don't really care about the whole production, but like once you're in and everybody knows what they're doing and we're entertaining the world, I think we did an incredible job. I loved our song. I loved what we were delivering. It was pinchy moments. It was all beautiful and sad. It was sorrow and joy all at the same time.
And you feel that too, Zachariah, when you take your community, your culture, your people with you on that journey. You are showcasing that to the world. It's one of the most watched productions and television, you know, shows of the year, that you've got this completely new audience, but they're tuning in and seeing something that is so different, that they're seeing this black fella from South Australia representing mob on the world stage.
I know. And then it's ripping your poll saying Milka Lila, like in one of Australia's oldest languages, you know, like it was, and then calling it For Blood, and just for it to be a song of unity. And I was so present. I was so secure. Electric Fields was raised on festival stages and everything that we've been through, all the shows that we did in Adelaide, all of that prepared us for that little moment. And any artist can really do it that trust their grind, you know? It's just what happens now, I don't know, but like I know it's not going to be small.
No,
I'm
absolutely
loving the symphony orchestra stuff, though. I'm really loving the symphony orchestra stuff.
And we'll get there into a second, but I was going to say, you know, when you live this life at first, but the incredible thing about Eurovision was that Jess Mowboy was the first black fella to present. And that was, geez, when was that? That was 2000 and, oh, I forget when it was, but I know Brother Damian Miller was the head of mission over there in Denmark or somewhere over there. And it was such an incredible thing to see a black fella there at Eurovision. And I remember Jess wasn't in there to win. It was more of a showcase or a...
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was different when you mob were over there. But I think it's just an incredible story just to have mob representing over there on the world stage. But we're talking orchestras now. You premiered with the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra last year, and that collaboration, which was absolutely incredible. There's two clips. I would encourage everybody who's tuned in to Google it on YouTube, or jump onto YouTube and just search it, Electric Fields Melbourne Symphony Orchestra. There's two tracks there. They are just absolutely amazing. You did Sydney Opera House last year with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. Now, coming up on the 2nd of August, as part of Clancestry, you are performing with the Queensland Symphony Orchestra.
Yes!
Can you share with our audience what they can expect and what that whole, I guess, because obviously working with Michael as a producer, very talented piano player or keyboardist, and also amazing singer, you don't often hear his voice. Well, he certainly doesn't do much stuff solo, but I remember him particularly back in uni days as, his voice is incredible and so unique. But to go from, you know, the electronic, you know, composite, and I know you've done acoustic as well, you know, piano and voice, but to work with an orchestra, what's that process like, and what's that experience like to do something completely different?
I just think with all of those instruments, a symphony, you know, like it triggers and it challenges anybody that listens to symphony music or orchestras, how it draws all of that emotion, whatever your state of mind is at that time, just alone, these instruments do that. And for it to then be blended with our music and our traditional songs and the English songs, and it's spine tingling, like feeling that behind you, supporting the story and hitting everybody's chakras while they're all sitting down is such an amazing, colorful thing to witness. It is so serious, but so, it feels like you're at a baby's birth. A baby just was born at the hospital, and that you're going to a funeral, both at the same time. It just feels like that life and death. But the meaning of it and its celebratorianism of it all, that's what orchestras make me feel. But like what we bring with the emotional effect as well, just with our human symphoniness, I think people should just expect to just be open and it will be what it will be. I'm excited because I've got a few surprises in it that is going to be good for Brisbane. Like, this is the first time it will happen for Brisbane show. But other than that, I just think that the audience just needs to just surrender or, like, just give yourself to that space. That's all I think that the audience should do when we rock up there in August.
Now, before Zach Rye were talking about that analogy of a canvas and a paintbrush, I'm just thinking in my head now where you've almost got an additional set of colours in your paint toolkit, which is each different instrument of the orchestra, where you get to paint a much more, well, I wouldn't say detailed landscape, but it's a different texture to it, which is incredible.
Yeah, like with all the what I'm used to with electric fields, I think it's acrylic paint, but this one here is acrylic paint and metallic paint. Like it's shimmer. It's like it's titanium. It's marvelness, you know.
And the other thing too that I'm thinking at the moment, Zachariah, and I kind of reflect on, you know, the work that William Barton has done with the Didgeridoo and Orchestra, and a conversation him and I had many, many years ago, which I said to him, like, and this certainly applies to electric fields in an orchestra, is you are getting the most whitest of white history, European history, of, you know, back to the Baroque period of the 1600s through the classical era, the mid-1700s, of what the development of an orchestral, you know, sound is and how that's evolved over time, you know, with your Mozarts and Beethovens, etc., into the 19th century or 20th century classical period, to mould that with the oldest continuing culture on this planet. And it's quite an interesting kind of dynamic because it's a very European, you know, something that is just the complete opposite ends. You bring that together and how that just creates this amazing new sound.
Absolutely. And that's the genius of Michael, the just even some of with a few of the language songs, because it's the language, it's the Yan Kundera language, which is older than all of those instruments put together, even with the Yiraki. Like, it's one of the biggest, it's the oldest sound put together as well. So there's a not just the older sound, and not to like boast ourselves on it, but like it has an identity that is really, again, sure of itself. You can't break anything when the thing already knows who it is. It doesn't need to be told or to be influenced on anything. Like Yan Kundera language is its own identity. Yes, I'm Anangan, I speak it, but that sound and those, the way that those words move, like I can't control that identity. I only speak it. I'm also just a vessel to that. And like how the Yiraki is like land to the to our water, to our country, and it has it. It does its sound, and it cripples you, and it can rise you up. Like it's such a deadly feeling, you know. That you're a part of that. And that's all you need to do. You don't need to go and do any marketing and anything. Just merge into it. Just be about it. Be in it.
Oh, you give me goosebumps explaining that to Zachariah, because first time I've seen that clip there, I think it was it Shade Away, that you did with Melbourne Symph Orchestra? Oh,
wow. Yeah.
And it's just obviously very familiar with that song before I saw the MSO performance, but it was absolutely incredible. But so for our listeners out there, Clancestry, 2nd of August at the QPAC Concert Hall. If you Google that, you'll jump on there. And I'm really sad I won't be able to see that, Zachariah.
You're right. You're a superstar, too. You can travel the world, give yourself to the world.
Nah, don't be like that. But as this show is Black Excellence, when we caught up last year in Brisbane when you're performing at a gala event at the convention centre, when I caught up with you and Michael, I was saying, you know, which way, what's been happening, and and just saying, I think Michael was like, yeah, apparently we're getting keys to the city. Oh. Adelaide's given us keys to the city. And I think I asked the question, I was like, what does that actually, because I've seen that on The Simpsons and in movies, yeah, and stuff, and they say, yeah, you get keys to the city. But as this show is black excellence, I don't think there can be anything more black excellence than getting keys to the city. But what does that actually mean?
I don't know, but I was telling my little team and my people, like, if there's no meaning, I'm going to give a meaning to this key. Like, you've been give us these little plaques and all of these things and rah, rah, rah. Well, then I'm going to make the city give it a real meaning. So I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I know that I'm... Because I'm working on a foundation at the moment, so maybe I'm going to scam away, try and use that as a key, you know? Like, just, it should mean something. But it was so weird when we saw our name with, like, people of the likes of the Dalai Lama and Rupert Murdoch and all of these. I was like, whoa, what did they do with their key?
It's an incredible thing, you know, Zachariah, to get those keys to the city. But what does the future hold? I know you talk about this kind of natural progression of yourself as an artist and as Electric Fields as a movement or a vehicle, as that creative expression of yourself and Michael, and let that be what it is. But yeah, what does the future hold for Zachariah Fielding?
I've got to figure this out now, because, like, I've done a lot of internal work and external work. I think that's something that I got to tap into a little bit more. I've got to find out what we're doing as a people, as a community, as black fellas, because I sense no direction. And that kind of scares me. So I think I need to just focus on what the palette looks like as a collective instead of a... So I've enjoyed my life as a solo thing, moving into visual and having Electric Fields, but I don't know how I sit as a so-called community right now. And I don't know what that looks like. And I think that has has a lot to do with the referendum and all of those things. So I need to know what I am in the collective and what I can offer in a creative place and a creative space in that. And then I'll return back to what I got to do for myself, if that makes sense. Because I can't operate if my community's not operating. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. 100%. And
I think that's what the elephant is in the room. And I don't know how long it's going to take, but I just know that it's been hanging around for a bit too long, if you know what I mean.
Well, I think, you know, you've had the success over a short amount of time. Well, I wouldn't say short amount of time, but it's just, like, I think it's been very profiled out there in the big world. And obviously you talk about, you know, the support of, you know, them strong women from the APY lands in your, you know, your art, the art centre there in Adelaide, which, you know, it's some incredible, obviously. You know, I asked before, you know, your relation went to Sally Scales there, because we were on a trip over in the US back in 2019 together at they were exhibiting at the, what was it, the Manil Gallery in Houston? So incredible that, you know, you've been on this journey as a musical, you know, artists and visual artists and you know, with that support of your community, which is incredible. But I've really enjoyed this yarn today, Zachariah. And I'm so glad being able to get you on the show, particularly in the lead up to Clancestry, because it's been a good excuse to reach out and go, yeah, we need to have that yarn. But but I've always enjoyed having that yarn with you. You know, what was it, Yarban early this year and a couple over, yeah, over the years, and look forward to the next one.
I reckon many more. It's lovely always seeing you. It's so good. I love doing the collabs with you. It's so good. We need to do something proper.
Yeah, but, you know... Like we talk about it, it'll organically happen. It'll happen when it happens, because, yeah, you can't kind of force these things, right? I think that's been a really good message from what we've been yarning about today. So, I really appreciate your time today, Zachariah, and we'll put some info in the show notes for anybody who wants to see your show. But also, that's out on, you got that on vinyl too, eh?
Yes, we do. So get out vinyl, y'alls, please.
Get that old school record player. But no, it's been absolutely deadly, Zachariah. You have been tuned to Let's Talk of Black Excellence with my deadly guest on the show today, Zachariah Fielding. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you, bye-bye.
No more whispering in our mind.
Let's Talk, Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. on AAA Murray Country. The National Indigenous Radio Service and iHeartRadio. You can catch up on AAA.org.au, proudly supported by the Community Broadcast Foundation.